Welcome to the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm John Barbon, and with me is Vivek, and he came in third in our last transformation contest. And Vivek was doing... now, you had a contest before where you lost a lot of weight. Now, this time, you were putting on muscle. And so we've got a kind of a different story going on here. And then I think what's even more interesting is what you've done since the contest. And you've gone out of your way to do some DEXA scanning and get down to the root of what's really going on with your recomposition. And I don't know. I know that you've got ideas, so I'll just let you kind of roll with it, because we've got stuff to talk about, like, as you know, things about body fat percentage and whether or not you have visible abs versus how much muscle you have and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, since I had never done weight training before, in 86 it was mostly about fat loss. Mm-hmm. And I lost a lot of fat. I was at close to 5.5% body fat at the end of 86, and I still didn't have, I mean, I wasn't big. I didn't have very good muscle definition. I didn't have even the abs were not all that visible. Mm. And so I was able to start MBF in earnest right after 86. Sure. I mean, it was a Thanksgiving weekend, and I was able to start it right after that. In MBF, I was eating at maintenance about 2,100 calories, and MBF really helped me gain some muscle mass. I followed it very carefully, very rigorously, kept up with all the with the times, with the rest periods and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it went well. With MBF, I gained significant muscle mass. But I think one of the things that were bothering me was how much fat I might gain, body fat, versus how much, I mean, there's an increase in weight. How much was weight and how much was muscle mass? Mm-hmm. And so that's what prompted me to start getting DEXA scans.
Right, and you've got access. So I've actually visited you in Austin. You've got access to a pretty good and affordable DEXA scanner right at the University of Texas.
Yeah, it's just $45 per session. So if you're getting it once a month, $45 seems to be very, very worth it. Mm-hmm. To know exactly how much of the weight you gained was fat and how much of it was lean body mass. Mm-hmm. That just knowing that is tremendous, because I went over the concept of metrics and kind of software engineering principles, iterative techniques, trying to apply to other projects. And it's the same thing here. You can't know what to change if you don't know the data. Mm-hmm. And knowing what worked and what didn't work is huge. Mm-hmm.
All right, so then, okay, so where are we at then? So for 87, you did MBF?
Yeah, 87, I did MBF, and I started doing the DEXA scans towards the end of January. Mm-hmm. And I would do them pretty frequently and pretty much every 4 weeks, and there was a steady, slow increase with MBF, approximately between 1 to 2 pounds of lean body mass per month. Mm-hmm. So I'd have a very slow and steady, measurable increase every 4 weeks. Towards the end of 87, I had tennis elbow. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know better. I thought because I had tennis elbow, the best thing to do was to quit lifting weights for a few weeks, which was towards the end of 87, which I did. Certainly my elbow got better, but I also noticed in the DEXA scans that there was no improvement. So it seemed to be that the whole thing on the internet where they say that the real growth happens during rest and recovery is just not true. Growth happens because you stimulated the muscles, and it happens for a period of approximately, I guess, 36 hours to to 40 hours or so. And after that, it doesn't just happen because you're resting. And that was, I guess it's similar to the starvation mode concept in diet. There's a mirror image in the midst on the two sides. And I didn't have any increase in the final month of 87 as per my DEXA.
Sure, yeah. And so, and that shows you how quickly it happens, right? A couple of weeks off, and you just stop right where you are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was. It really started to hit me then that. Even it's so simple, but it's the same with the diet. When it hits you, that the only thing that matters is the caloric deficit. It's not nutrients or saturated fat or
meal timing or any of that stuff.
Meal timing or anything. It's just calorie deficit for the week. And I think it was quite a, I mean you say this a lot, but in your podcast, but it sometimes takes time for the lesson to really sink in, that really all that matters is the amount of work you stress on that particular muscle, how much work and stress you put on that particular muscle, and how frequently you do it.
Yeah,
and
so work.
The more you do.
Yeah. So the amount of effort in a given unit time.
Yeah.
So if you can work out four times in a week or eight times in a week, as long as you don't break down eight times in a week, you're going to grow faster.
Yeah, and that's where the next part of the kind of the story came in. After the 87, I was still kind of laying off on doing heavy, intense or higher exercise at the gym. I was just doing a little bit. And then, on May 12th, I had my DEXA scan, and I still hadn't really gone up since my end of March, or middle March DEXA lean body mass, because I hadn't done much weights. And certainly not enough unaccustomed pressure on the muscles. And so that week, on May 15th, I started, it hit me that the importance of, that your muscle is in a catabolic state, not because of excess protein or anything, but simply because you put work on it. And it kind of remains there for maybe about 36, 40 hours or so. And after that, it's...
Oh, you mean anabolic. I think you said catabolic, but you mean anabolic.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant to say anabolic.
Yeah.
So that's what puts your muscle in an anabolic state. Working the muscle, not much of the other factors. And so, I started increasing the frequency of workouts to where, from May 15th, I pretty much hit workouts at 10 workouts a week, and I kind of ensured that I worked pretty much any muscle group every 2-3 days, so that it kind of remained in an anabolic state, and sometimes more frequently than that, some muscle groups. Essentially, what I did was the strength training, I was doing hypertrophy, and then after that, strength training. In the mornings, and in the afternoons I would do essentially strength endurance and any weak muscles, like my abs are kind of weak, my chest is still underdeveloped, and my hamstrings are slightly underdeveloped. So I would like do strength endurance and also a little bit of focusing on the weak spots. But in the mornings I would do like the proper AI 3.0 exercise, like the strength, and then for 4 weeks I did hypertrophy, and then 4 more weeks I did the strength.
So, and your total volume then wasn't necessarily double. It was the main workout plus, like, what, 50% more in the evenings? Or was it straight up double?
I was 50% more is pretty much, it was pretty much double. I did, it was significant, meaning 1 hour, what I mean is I did 1 hour in the mornings, and then 1 hour in the evenings.
Oh yeah, that's double, And I know you asked me about whether or not the concept of cardio burn, is it not just activity? If it's just activity, why not just do another weight training session?
Yes, that's exactly how I saw it, was the cardio seems like it, you know, like it may have a lot of health benefits, but it doesn't stress the muscle. So if there are only so many workouts you can do in a week before hitting overtraining or injury, whatever that limit is, it just seemed to make sure that the muscle was being stressed in every one of those workouts, rather than something else that was intense that didn't stress the muscle, which would have no muscle gaining. It may have other benefits, but...
But in your state right now, you've got so much muscle growth to catch up on. You can worry about cardio later in, like, years from now. You can, for now, every minute in the gym, you might as well spend building muscle.
Exactly. Every minute to spend muscle. Plus, perhaps, honestly, when I do squats, that tires me way more than a running session.
When you have
the dumbbell squats on the pyramid.
There's definitely a cardiovascular benefit to a lot of the workouts. Like they're not really designed like you're like a hang around in the gym for 5 minutes in between sets powerlifting thing. Like there's definitely a conditioning benefit to most of what we have. It's pretty rare to go through any AI workout. I don't know, pick anyone you want. It's pretty rare to go through it without getting your heart rate up.
Yeah. Yes, especially on the leg and back exercises. It's tough. When on the leg days of the strength exercises, I'm so glad that the evening is more strength endurance, where I'm doing light weights, lots of reps, to avoid the risk of injury. But it certainly takes the wind out of me when I do it, and I try to make sure I follow the rest periods, the weights, so I don't fool myself. I try to set it up in a way, because the mind your mind wants to fool yourself. Like even during the diet, your mind tries to tell you really didn't eat so much, and you have to fight that by honestly recording everything you did. And it's the same thing here, even more so for me here. The mind tries to fool you. The mind tries to say, oh, you can do one less rep or a little less weight or take longer rest periods. So by measuring that pretty strictly, you can avoid fooling yourself into doing less work.
That's a pretty important point. It's if you kind of leave it up to instinct, you'll always do only just what you've done or less. You'll rarely push into your uncomfort zone. And that's why recording is kind of important. Like it's a big difference between following what's written on the page and then just going by feel. Like very few people can go by feel and actually push themselves. It's sort of, if you just leave it up to your body's going to tell you to go relax. It's not going to tell you to like push really hard.
Yeah, exactly. So my ritual, especially after 87, has been, my pre-workout ritual is actually a McDonald's ice cream. It's only 150 calories. It's cold, so it kind of gives you a jolt of energy. I guess it's a bunch of carbs. And so I do that along with an energy drink. And I'm sure people at the gym look at me strangely when they see me finishing off ice cream in the car before heading into the gym.
Especially because you're super lean. It's not like you have any fat.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's probably the most common question people ask me even before the gym or after the gym, when I don't bother with necessarily trying to have the healthiest possible food during that time period. People look at me and sometimes even come up and ask me as to how I'm staying lean, what the secret is.
And you're like, well, it's just 150 calories. It's not very many calories.
Yeah. I mean, the guy ate two apples. And granted, apples may have more nutritional value, but the gym has some apples up front along with water, and so the guy ate two apples. Well, two big apples is like 250 calories. my McDonald's ice cream is 150 calories. So I actually had fewer calories than he did. But it wasn't clear. I mean, it was so non-obvious to him. It's so non-obvious to people that there's something in their mind that healthy food is somehow not gonna. So somehow the body's not gonna.
Oh, it's called calorie. It's called calorie distortion and the health halo effect. I actually wrote about it in the new version of AGD. Basically, people assume quote unquote healthy food have less calories than they do, and then they assume that otherwise determined junk food has more calories than it does. So what you experienced is the normal societal bias between health food and, or at least what people think is healthy and what people think is unhealthy. The automatic assumption is that one has more calories than the other, and vice versa. And it's the constant underestimating of calories in quote healthy food that causes people who believe in healthy versus bad food to overeat the healthy food, because they just think there's just no calories in them. Like, I bet you he wouldn't believe at all that two big apples could actually have more calories than an ice cream. And it's all dose dependent, obviously, but they just won't believe it. And the worst part in the research is that people who believe in the concept of healthy versus unhealthy food, it's a two-part thing. They're the worst at underestimating the calories in the healthy food, but they're the ones who are the most confident in their opinion.
Yeah, and that's incredible.
So the lie, they're so sure of the lie they're telling themselves, but they're the ones who tell themselves the worst lie.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So whereas we, you know, we get to the point where we're like, oh yeah, you know, there's 100 calories in that apple, and there's, you know, whatever, a couple hundred calories in a chocolate bar, and whatever, it's about the same thing. So
now the interesting thing about the increase in, when I did 10, when I started working out 10 times a week, was I pretty much started that May 15th, Monday, and then June 5th, I got my DEXA scan done. And I remember until then I had not, on May 12th and I'd got the DEXA scan, I really had no progress since March. Well, all the intense workouts had a huge increase. I had like a 2.9-pound increase in just 3 weeks.
Yeah. And what did the DEXA guy think? Because you've gotten to know the guy there, right?
Yeah. I did one more month. And I mean, I kept doing that for one more month, and so I took another DEXA on July 5th, and I had another 3 pounds increase. So I've had a total of close to 6 pounds of lean body mass since May 15th, since I started the 10 times a week workout protocol.
The double work. So it's clearly working. Did he ask you what you've been doing, or have you been telling him the whole way?
Yeah. The folks at the DEXA were really surprised by the increase in such a big increase for especially 2 times in a row in lean body mass, and they did ask, and I told them that, and they said that's true, it's work done. There was a caution to be careful about overtraining or injuries, which is true, one has to be cautious, but the way I handle that is by not lifting heavy, super heavy, kind of like, you had the permission to lift light concept, and I think that's a very powerful concept too. You don't have to lift the heaviest possible every time to have unaccustomed stress on the muscle. You can have not quite as heavy, but lots of reps, and that's still... That still would have the unaccustomed stress on the muscle.
Sure, and half of what you do is more in that category, right? That's probably how you're staying injury-free, is you go heavy part of the time and you go sort of moderate to light the other half. Otherwise, if you tried to go balls to the wall heavy every workout, you'd probably already be injured by now.
Yeah. If I had done super heavy on every workout, I'd be injured by now. And I think the strength endurance really helps a lot, because it seems to improve the joints, the not so heavy high reps, in that 21 reps, as you have it in there, really seems to heal the joints, feel better. It's almost like after I do some of that, and when I go back to the strength exercise, I even feel stronger and better. So you don't. I guess the thing is, one doesn't need to be heavy. Even doing strength endurance can have benefits in when you go back to heavy.
Mm-hmm. And just to put all this in context, how old are you?
I'm 38 now.
You're 38, so you're the same age as me, and you're experiencing growth like this is like teenage, 19-year-old juvenile muscle growth degree of growth. Like you're experiencing pretty rapid growth here. So I just want everyone to realize that it doesn't matter when you start. If you do this, it's going to work. Like you can, you know, and Adam Murphy, I don't know if you listen to Adam Murphy's podcast, but because I know you and I talked about this.
And
when you were like, can we really do this much? And I'm like, yeah, you can go twice a day. You can go three times a day if the rest of your life allows for it. Now, you're in a unique position. You own your own business and all that kind of stuff. So you can, you know, not everyone's got that kind of flexibility. But if you do, man, go for it. If you're trying to build some muscle, you can go twice a day.
Sure. But what I find is even on very busy days and very stressful days, the working out is a welcome relief because before I go to work, I have the hour workout, and then in the evening I just squeeze in an hour. It also helps relieve stress if done right. And
yeah, that's true. It sounds like you found a really good balance. I mean, and who's kidding who? Even the busiest people still might kill an hour or so watching TV, so there's almost no excuse.
Right.
What did that type of training do to your appetite?
Oh yeah, it increased my appetite. I was, you know, during 87, until the Matewell thing, I was at around 2,100 calories. I did get hungrier, and I went up. I kind of did it this way. I increased by about 300 calories, so I went to about somewhere in the 2,400 per day ballpark. And then what I did was if I worked out, I just added a flat 100 to 150 calories, like an ice cream or a candy bar or an apple. I mean
something that's really easy to monitor. Yeah.
So I added that, and it made a difference. It really helped me. At 2,100, I was definitely hungry and kind of struggling. But once I brought it up to about 2,400, and then additionally, when I added about 100 to 150 for each time I worked out, so basically I was doing about 25, at times even 2,600, on certain days. I mean, on my workout days. All of that really, really helped. And interestingly, my body fat came down in the final DEXA between June 5th and July 5th. Even though I had an increase to about 500, my body fat percentage actually came down by 0.5%.
So you shaved off. Yeah. So your body fat percentage decreased. That's probably likely. I mean, really, that just means you added muscle mass and probably held your body fat constant, and then the percentage drops.
Yeah. More than likely, 0.5% is not massive decrease. It's just a little bit. So,
but it's proof that you don't need to gain fat to gain muscle. Like, you've gained a lot of lean body mass without really changing body fat.
Exactly. One doesn't... And I think people gain fat if they increase their calories hugely. I mean, certainly, if you're working out a lot and intensely, your burn is certainly going to be higher. If you work out intensely for an hour, you're going to, I guess, burn a couple of hundred calories, close to, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. And if you do that twice, that's, you know, additional calories you're burning. So
yeah, no, you got a pretty good burn going there. Like, okay, so how tall are you? Like 5'10"-ish?
Yeah, I'm about 5'10".
And you said, you know, with all of this extra exercise volume, you're eating somewhere around 25 to 27 when you add in the extra calories, right?
Yes.
Something like that. And the result was you gained lean mass and body fat percentage went down.
Yes.
So there's you know, I know you're just one person, but that's pretty solid evidence, especially considering you're not guessing your way through this. You're actually using DEXA data to prove it. You ate, you know, what we would predict is more or less your maintenance, and not just BMR maintenance, but like energy expenditure. You're eating to about the amount you're burning within reason, and you're giving,
right,
and you're gaining muscle mass. So you just, and a lot, like anyone, I challenge anyone to actually test and see if they can put on what, 5-6 pounds of lean mass in the next 3 months like you did. That's insane. Like if I did that, people would just accuse me of using drugs. You're still nowhere near your genetic limit, so you've got room to do that. But that's the proof. The proof is, I mean, you're living proof that it's doable without gaining, like gaining muscles, totally doable without gaining any fat. If anything, your fat,
right,
like you said, your fat percentage went down.
Right. It was all, I mean, the interesting thing about this is the theory followed the theory came first and then the practical. Like all the things you mentioned in podcasts and when we talk, where you talk in terms of just do the calorie deficit, just do the work, and it'll come.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just followed the theory carefully. I mean, of course, applying it to my life and putting the proper metrics in place. But basically, it was just followed, and the results just comes. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, you have a calorie deficit, lose weight, you put in the work, gain muscle. It's really as simple as that.
It's pretty nice when it works out that nicely, eh? Like it's
right.
It's just like you just follow along and off it goes, and then it works. So it's, I mean, and this, and that's the kind of, it's a good example of just getting it done and trusting it versus like wondering and speculating and, well, what about this or what about that? It's, you know, all of that effort could just be spent in the gym and getting some, and then heading off and getting like a scan done just to find out. You'd be so much further ahead. For anyone who's not sure, like, and you have access to a DEXA, just do it. Like if you can at all do it, then it'll lay so many of your questions and insecurities to rest when you have like the proof right in front of you. And now you and Adam Murphy are two good examples of what we probably would guess are ectomorphic based people that who can handle significantly more weight training volume. Like I don't even know if I could do as much weight training as you do right now, but I mean I don't need to at this point, but the point being you guys can handle a lot of volume and you needed to. And it's
right.
And who knows? Maybe a year from now you won't be able to handle this volume. But right now, clearly your body's is responding big time.
Yeah. I think the other reason why Adam and me can kind of handle this volume is we're still, at least in my case, I just started weight training. I mean, it's still less than a year that I started weight training.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started 86, just before I started 86 was when I started weight training. That was in, I guess, September of 2009.
Yeah, so you're just closing in on a year now.
So I'm still, I guess the weights I'm able to lift, even though they're heavy for me, aren't all that heavy for somebody who's close to their genetic potential like you. So it seems to me that since you would have to stimulate those muscles, you'd have to lift that much heavier. Perhaps the volume has to be a little bit less, I guess. I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think as you... you know what? For me, as a contrast, I don't lift as heavy... I never lift now as heavy as I'm capable of lifting. So even though on any given exercise I can do... you know, X amount of weight, I always go about 80% of that. I know what level of weight I can handle and whether or not it's going to lead to kind of a more of a joint soreness or a risk of potential injury. It's hard to explain. Most of the guys who've been at it for 15, 20 years kind of know what I'm talking about, and everyone, it's more now backing off and doing the mind-muscle connection, really, really squeeze the muscle. The weight is there to help you force the squeeze on the muscle, but it's not It's not the old school way of thinking of just move heavy weights through space. The weight is purely there just to give you something to contract against. And now with that said, light for me is still heavy for you at this point, right? Like maybe
right,
5 years
right.
from now, you and I will be a lot closer. But when I say I'm going 80% of my max, I'm probably still, you know, 50 or 60% heavier than your max, right? So you still have
right.
all that gap to fill in to the point where, you know, we're on the level playing field. And you know, and that's the difference between the amount of muscle I have and you have, or any guy at my level so far. I mean, I've got about 19 years on you as far as this goes. So it doesn't, there's no reason to think that you should be lifting the same as me at this point. But it won't take you 19 years. You'll probably catch up in the next 3 or 4 to a level where it doesn't look a whole lot different. And then from there, it's just, I mean, I'm more or less maintaining and refining at this point. I don't have 6 pounds of growth in me the way you still do. Or the
and
way
I
you
think,
just did and what you still have to
yeah.
go.
And I think basically doubling up on the work is increasing the speed, just as you have a very big caloric deficit and you lose weight you lose fat rapidly. You increase the work you do in a given time, your gains increase. Your gains go so much faster. So if the question is how do you get to your Adonis and how do you get to your Adonis index quicker? Well, for the calorie, you know, have a caloric deficit and once you're done with that, increase your volume as much as without going into overtraining or injury, walk all the way to that limit, and that would be the fastest one could possibly go in terms of.
And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about getting there faster, right? Like that's kind of what we're talking about. We're talking about the speed that you get there. You've got a lifestyle that allows you to do more work, or at least you know you choose to, and it works, and so. That's it. If people are impatient, the answer is not a different program or a supplement or so. It's just more work. That's all it is. It's not even lifting heavier. It's just lifting more and more often.
Yeah.
Like more total more reps and sets more often.
Oh, the other thing for me was the gym. I mean, getting in shape was kind of part of, you know, it you know, like you always say, it should fit in. It shouldn't be your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that should you should make a priority. It should fit into your life, but it shouldn't be your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a pretty important principle for me, because the part of getting in shape is also to have a better life. And so I don't obsess about it, other than when I go work out and then I'm done with it. But then I also, one of the things I try to do is transform myself. It also inspired me to transform myself in other ways. So I started dressing better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, well, we're going to put those really good pictures up.
Different clothing.
Yep.
And in fact, the photographer who took my photographs for 87 said that, you know, he in fact, after shooting the photographs, he talked about there being some companies that he worked with where there were modeling opportunities, and he wanted to ensure that he took photographs with my, you know, with getting clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I you know, I also got a shoot with you know, wearing different types of clothes, more like a modeling shoot.
Yeah, well, and those we're going to put those are on the website, so anyone listening, go check it out. We're going to put 2 or 3 of those pics up too, and they look really good. And that's part of all this. You got to look good in your clothes.
I think the lesson there was something you mentioned before, that is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talk on the forums about the shirt on, shirt off big. You can, you know, once we have a good physique, you can look good with the shirt on. It depends on the shirt that you have on. Meaning, if you wear a big baggy shirt, it's going to be hidden. But if you wear shirts and, you know, if you wear clothes that fit, which hint that's usually small for most guys, unless you're very tall, it's going to be in the, it's probably going to be small. And just clothes, match clothes that fit, and then it fits really well. And the physique is visible. One doesn't need to have the shirt off for the physique to be visible, is my.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, maybe it's a North American thing, but just so few guys know how to dress.
Right.
It's just something I see, like, as a recurring theme. I don't know. I just, it's like most guys, it's an afterthought. It's like they'll go to the gym and do all that work, and then it's just jeans and a t-shirt, and they don't really care how they fit.
Right, right. When it can make all the difference.
Totally.
The physique can look good. Mm-hmm. For the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, as part of my transformation, I have taken stand-up comedy classes.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Sorry?
Yeah, you were telling me about that. How's that going?
It's going really well. In fact, one of the bits that I, you know, usually stand-up bits are something negative because people don't want to hear something positive. It's not funny. I mean, it's something, you being annoyed about something or upset about something is usually a bit.
Yeah.
But once the class heard about my transformation and the instructor heard about it, he has me write a bit on, on the positive of the fact that I changed, but all the frustrations and all the stupid diets out there and all the things out there, he wanted me to incorporate that into a bit, which is something I'm working on. And in August, in improv, in August or September, in improv, I'm going to be performing.
Well, that's awesome.
And hopefully I'll, you know, we'll be able to deliver that bit.
That would be, yeah, that would be interesting. I'm interested to hear how that goes. All right, so well, let's wrap it up here. What's the final advice? I mean, to me, it's tracking. But what do you think?
Yeah, same thing from 86. Metrics. It's like metrics, metrics, metrics.
Yep.
Keep track of everything you do. It worked with weight loss, and it'll also work with muscle gain. Try to track your muscle gain. Try to increase the work, unaccustomed pressure on the muscles, the work done, as much as your lifestyle and injury overtraining allows. And you should be able to very rapidly make gains and start getting close to your Adonis index.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add to that it's not the amount of weight you use, but it's how hard you squeeze the muscle. And it's the permission to lift light matters.
Right, right. Permission to lift light definitely matters. In fact, that's key. That's what allows you to do more injury-free reps and get gain. If you're lifting as heavy as possible every time, more than likely, at some point, you'll get injured very quickly and be out of commission for a little while.
Mm-hmm. So those two things go hand in hand. Extra volume also means not, like, the idea of just squeezing the muscle with moderate weight and not just always pounding the heavy weights.
Right, right. Not always pounding the heavy weights.
All right, well, I think that's a good place to leave it. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Sounds good. All right, so for Vivek K, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.